You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On the other side of the street, I knew stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that's deja vu, but I thought this can't be true.
8:19 on the West Coast, 11:19 on the East Coast. Joining me is Chris Woodbridge. Woody, what's up? Where you been, man?
Can I ask you the same question? We haven't had our monthly in a little while.
Yeah, what'd you do? Forget about me?
Nope. Been waiting on the call. I sit by the phone waiting for it to call.
Strumming your fingers like a Maytag repairman?
There you go.
McNamara, that bastard. Did you watch the PBS series, Vietnam?
I did not. I did not have a chance to, but had an interesting conversation with a couple of folks about it.
All right. What did they say?
Really, fairly negative review from, I think you probably know, Bing West, Francis J. West.
Yeah, I saw what he wrote.
Yeah, he came off pretty negative on it. Had a conversation with General Neal, retired.
Right.
He also felt fairly negative about it. That it's a difficult subject, and you could probably anticipate the tack or the slant that Ken Burns would take on it. Not the most. I mean, very talented. You know, tremendous television historian. Ability to produce documentary television series and shows, really exceptional, but not the not an unbiased reporter. So I think it was fairly predictable that it would kind of come out that way.
Well, you know what? I mean, I watched the whole thing and I've interviewed a number of people, and I would take issue with those guys. And you and I are both in the business of storytelling. So I'm kind of intrigued on how do you limit Vietnam so that you can tell it, even in 17 and a half hours? I mean, Vietnam is a big, pregnant beast of storylines and how you tell them. So I'm curious. Now the assignment is, Woody, write this down, because you're junior to me, even though you rose to a higher rank. That's irrelevant. It's when your boot ass joined the Marine Corps, okay? So, because you're junior, watch the whole series, and I'd be curious what you have to say, having heard what you've heard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And really, everything that I've talked to folks about and read about it in all seriousness.
Right.
I need to watch it before I start, making any categorical judgments for myself.
There was great anxiety in the community of Vietnam veterans about, is this just going to be one more hammer job on us as a group? Somebody else trying to, going to tell people they're going to tell the story and not being able to get it right. What I will tell you, what's absolutely riveting is the interviews they did with NVA, Viet Cong veterans,
sure.
Young people that went down to work on the Ho Chi Minh Trail with wooden shovels and, spent years down there. And it's just, from the perspective from the other side, just absolutely riveting, absolutely riveting. And I'll tell you what, I didn't know a lot about Con Tien. And here's a question for you. Why didn't we get taught about that shit? Why was the Marine Corps, I guess, doing what the rest of the DOD was, which is trying to get away from Vietnam as fast as they could? It's amazing to me. I hear the story of Con Tien, I'm like, I don't know that story. I didn't know the story. I told you this before. I didn't know the story of My Lai, really. The lessons I should have learned, I didn't know that.
Right.
And so, the best boot that's ever been made, we're still wearing a version of it, is the Jungle Boot. We weren't allowed to wear that in the 80s. We weren't allowed to wear the bush cover. The guys who wore their Vietnam, utilities, you'd see them in the field, and you'd be like, oh, shit, look at that. Like, hey, man, why are the pockets slanted? Well, so you can get to them.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Why don't we do that anymore? I don't know. Well, why don't we have those gussets on the side like you do? I don't know. And so it was just...
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point. There was definitely a sense that, you know, and I'm talking specifically in early to mid-80s, that there was really no worthwhile lessons to be learned. And it fell out of, except at the broadest level of, you know, memorizing a couple of dates and, Operation Frequent Wind and Eagle Pole. Other than that, it was very much glossed over.
Right.
It came back into, I'll call it the broader curriculum, in about 2004, 2005, specific to an irregular warfare counterinsurgency lens. And so, again, still not extensive teaching about Kantian or Kaysan even, but a focus on the combined action platoons, a focus on some of the counterinsurgency operations, but still without a real detailed study outside of the School of Advanced Warfighting, which still does a study throughout the year, and then a staff ride in Vietnam for about 5 to 7 days on the ground.
God bless those seven guys that get to go to that, huh?
24.
Okay, it's 24. Sorry about that.
16 to 18 Marines, and then Joint Service Officers and Allies. But 24 person student body. So but you're right. It's interesting. Is it that there are no lessons to learn, or do we just want to kind of move on past that?
Yeah.
But you're right. Those significant battles are not necessarily taught as part of the curriculum, the wider curriculum.
And it's to me amazing because the lessons to be learned there. And I will tell you the thing that I've learned the most. Since I think we're on our 17th month coming up here, is I've learned the most about Vietnam of anything, of any different issue that we've looked at. I've learned the most, a lot about transitioning and the way not to do it, and I've learned a ton about Vietnam and how different Vietnam was. Carl Marlanis explaining, no, when you're in triple canopy jungle and you make contact and they've got a complex bunker system that's built like an X-ray that's laid into the side of a mountain that you can't do an envelopment on, all you do is run into more crossfire. You have to be patient. You have to use napalm and burn the jungle out. Then you have to blow the shit out of it. And I was sitting here listening. I'm like, I've never heard this. I didn't know shit about Kantian and the battles that got fought inside the DMZ by Marines from 1-9 and other battalions of 9th Marines over there. And I'm watching it in that documentary going, holy shit, man. That was crazy stuff. And I'm kind of embarrassed at the mortaring and rocketing that I experienced. Like, I wouldn't even tell those guys about it because they'd spit at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't compare.
It doesn't. It doesn't. It reminds me of the story I heard from a guy. I can't remember his name. Forgive me, but he lost a leg at the Boston Marathon bombing. He's a civilian. But because of the nature of that, they opened up Walter Reed and Bethesda to he and his wife, who were both amputees. Now, he's a below-the-knee. I never heard of that. He's a below-the-knee single amputee. So he comes into the ward at Bethesda, and they start teasing him. And I think his name's Joe. And the Marines that are double amputees and high amputees, they're looking at him and go, oh, Joey's got a paper cut. Joey got a boo-boo. Joey, is Joey okay? He said it was the fraternity that I experienced there. But I saw, you know, what they were going through and that what I went through. And I had the same feeling at Kantian, like, yeah, that's some serious shit. But I just, again, to wind us up, we never heard about it. And I would have loved to sit there and have them broken out the maps. I remember Ed Kelly, when I was at IOC, we would do the fireside chat. And Ed Kelly received colonel type, was CO of the basic school. He was awarded the Navy Cross for actions against the NVA, attacking them, pushing them off a hill. And then they were running out of ammunition, but the weather was such that they couldn't get resupplied, so they picked up NVA weapons, and they repulsed like two or three counterattacks. It was in a national park too, and I remember. But he came out with his maps at one night, and when we did the fireside chat, and that kind of stuff was awesome.
Yeah,
was absolutely awesome because they were. You could see they would go back there. You could hear in their voice that they would remember it, and they would tell you the details of it. And I remember sitting there that night wondering. Why haven't I heard more of this? So anyway.
Yeah, and you know, we're of a certain age. You know, when we came in as you know, new Marines, as junior lieutenants, there was still a significant amount of Vietnam era veterans and actual veterans of Vietnam who were in leadership positions. They're mostly, you know, very senior staff NCOs, warrant officers, and then, you know, colonels. But my first battalion commander was a three-tour Vietnam veteran. He'd done an enlisted tour and two tours as an officer, straight leg infantry and force reconnaissance, Silver Star recipient. And, you know, that was my very first battalion commander. And I remember going on patrol with him as a second lieutenant in the Philippines. You know, this is a guy who wanted to go out on every squad and platoon patrol. And,
did he have some patrolling skills, Woody?
Just a bit. Just a bit. There was a lot to learn from him.
I would imagine. The, second Lieutenant McNamara at the basic school at some kind of social function where we're all wearing, well, we're not wearing any, but everybody's wearing their ribbons, right? To my buddy. What's a Purple Heart with a silver star on it?
Yeah.
Vietnam guy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
I think that's like six.
That's, yeah.
What? No, it can't be. You think he's out of uniform?
No.
Yeah. I don't.
No, it's amazing.
I don't think that gunny's out of uniform. All right. Let's
whole talk. Other frame of reference. You know?
Yeah, I will tell you though. So you've been tasked. Let me know when you're.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely. We'll definitely revisit that after I have a chance to watch the series.
All right. Really interesting. The November issue or the October issue. Let's talk about it. Does it have a theme?
Absolutely. The this year's October issue, as we do annually, is the logistics focus issue. So not unlike aviation in May, in October we've got a kind of a full court press from Deputy Commandant for Installation and Logistics, the folks up at INL headquarters, and really from the LCE across the force, providing the bulk of our ideas and issues articles for October. So let me
ask you a question based on your content. The Heritage Foundation just published their annual evaluation of American military in the executive summary. Quote, the U.S. military is only marginally able to meet the demands of defending America's vital national interests. Marine Corps. The Marine Corps categorized overall as weak, and it was the only service to move in the last 12 months. The Corps continues to deal with readiness challenges driven by combined effects of high operational tempo and low level of funding. How, in the articles that you guys are running, are people going to see how that is impacting logistics?
So on the first two pieces to the answer, first, there is in almost everything we see, there's an underpinning that, you know, we love to beat our chests about, which is doing more with less. But when you really come down to that, less is less. And there is an underpinning of the realities of a you know, a decreasing defense budget and fiscal constraints on the Marine Corps across the entire MACTAF and the supporting establishment. So yeah, there's a certain amount of drumbeat in that, in the subtext of a lot of what we publish content-wise, not just in logistics, but across the board.
Okay.
The second part of that answer is, as always, consider the source. You know, remember that we really don't have any more nonpartisan think tanks anymore. The Heritage Foundation certainly is a great organization, but it has its point of view, its bent, and consequently its interpretation of facts, and those are skewed towards increasing defense spending. They're a very conservative leaning think tank, and consequently the information that they publish is going to be resonant with that community and will feed into arguments to increase things like defense spending. I'm not saying it's wrong, but you have to be critical about the source that you're quoting from.
All right. So we'll keep in mind as we continue to read. Give me a couple of articles that you would tell us do not miss these articles in the October issue.
So in the large category of logistics ideas and issues, important to read Lieutenant General Dana's introduction. Title is 21st Century Logistics, and it's a very good overview of the direction that he's been taking, and I'll characterize this as innovation and logistics. I mean, an awful lot of his priorities in his marching orders from the Commandant have been modernization and innovation in our ability to sustain the force, and our capabilities that provide that sustainment. So a good overview there from General Dana. There are a number of other articles from his staff that kind of dig in deeper to specific areas within the overall subject. Another one I'll highlight for you that I think people will find very interesting is titled Amazon on the Battlefield, and that's by Major Mike Graham and Lieutenant James Van Eerden. It's really focused on some lessons learned from Amazon's effort with drones in doing rapid response to retail orders, looking at applying the same kinds of technology to logistics on the battlefield, essentially supporting a distributed complex ground combat element, using some of the same technology to include quadcopter drone delivery in the future. So some of this is going on now, both experimentally and operationally, and that's a good forward-looking piece that covers that subject.
Go ahead. No, I've got a couple of emails for you. Keep going.
I've got a couple more that might be very interesting to some of the larger audience out there.
Sure.
There's two articles from Navy officers on medical training and medical operations, medical support. You've got one on training is medical simulation in the Marine Corps by Lieutenant Shannon Smithson. Really gives a detailed view of not just the simulations, but really kind of cover the waterfront of live tissue training, medical simulators, training our frontline combat lifesavers and corpsmen in the most realistic conditions possible, short of actual casualties. So good article there on the preparation that our medical battalions are doing and the Navy training establishment is doing. And then Lieutenant Commander Dave Kilimansky wrote an article on medical operations. So a very good forward-looking view of how again, in a distributed environment, expeditionary environment, our Navy brethren are supporting Marines in the field with medical care.
Woody, I've got an email. Mac, it just popped in here. He just said live tissue training. What is that? So could you explain for people that don't know what that is, what it is?
Okay, so live tissue training is a specific type of training for Navy corpsmen and doctors, but primarily for corpsmen. So think combat life-saving first aid, and then also for it has been delivered in the past to Marine combat lifesavers during the height of the surge in Iraq and Afghanistan. We were providing through Training and Education Command, providing live tissue training in the area of our major installations to both Navy and Marine. And what it is practicing life-saving techniques on an animal. It is a live animal that's been anesthetized and deliberately wounded. And then, again, practicing those golden hour and longer-term life-saving techniques with the actual equipment on an actual live animal, normally either a pig or a sheep or goat. Very politically sensitive topic in some circles. The good news of this is for a extended period of time, that program was expanded on, funded, and delivered to Marines as part of their pre-deployment training process. And as we've ramped down the volume of individuals and units going forward into that, those combat environments, that type of training has also ramped down, is now focused on the Navy corpsmen who are going to be those first responders. The simulation side is a way to potentially more effectively move away from the animal-based live tissue training and use a variety of really pretty amazing simulators that simulate a human body to teach those same skills in as realistic a manner as possible. One upside is because they're simulators, they can provide more detailed feedback on the measures that are being taken than obviously an animal that can't talk can. So interesting article there. But that's a thumbnail sketch of live tissue training.
Got
hope
it.
That answers the question.
Got, well, no, I mean, so, it wasn't without its controversy, just so people know. There was, first of all,
absolutely.
Animal rights activists were up in arms and I think we all had a very pragmatic approach to it. It's like, it's not the optimum, but if we can provide more realistic training, here before they go to war, it's probably going to save somebody's life. Certainly will save lives because they'll be used to it. And so
that's exactly right.
Right.
No, and yes, it is extremely, controversial, sensitive, and not something that's taken lightly.
Another email. This is kind of a question that I've asked everybody. I have been asked you, but the emailers remind me. Mac asks Woody about the NFL protests. What does he think? So, Woody, what do you think?
I think first and foremost, everyone has a right to express their opinions, but you don't necessarily have the right to do that anywhere you want or all the time. I think it's gotten to a point now where I think a lot of people lose sight of the fact that the NFL is a for-profit business. I think that there's a tipping point on profits from sponsors and television outlets for the NFL, they will probably change their view and enforce rules about not protesting. But right now, the protests are actually probably making them a little more money. Sponsors are not dropping by the dozens. TV stations are reporting some decline in viewership, but it hasn't dropped any games off any of the major networks. And until and unless there's a money side associated with this issue, the NFL is going to treat it like any other business opportunity. So I've got a kind of a cynical view on it. It's not all about money. It's only about money. So if it starts becoming unprofitable, then you might see some behavior change. But right now, both at the individual athlete level and at the league and owners level, it's probably making things a little more profitable because controversy breeds profits in media. And so until that changes, I think we're going to continue to see this this disrespectful behavior.
The this just came out within the last 60 minutes. Staring a 7.0 in metered market results last night, Monday Night Football was down double digits from last week's Kansas City victory over the Washington over your Washington Redskins, Woody.
They are not mine. They are co-located with me. Unfortunately, I got to put myself out there. I'm a New York Giants fan.
Oh, even worse.
Probably not this year.
Probably not.
Yeah, it's a rough season, let me tell you.
Down 17% in the ratings, that's actually a regular season game low for ESPN broadcast games and matches the MM result. I don't know what MM stands for. Result for the second game of the doubleheader Monday Night Football opener on September 11th. So interesting. I agree with you. I think it's an interesting reminder when millionaires get told that no, you have the right, and none of us, certainly as Marines, would question your right to do that. But there's also consequences with your rights, and there's also an owner that writes your paycheck. So as much as you believe you have that right, just understand there's consequences, and that an owner that employs you. And not everybody turns on the TV to see your social activism. So if you want to shove that down people's throats, don't be surprised if you get treated like an activist, which is going to mean there's going to be a backlash to it. And as long as you're okay with that and your owner's okay with it, I guess you're okay. But if he's not okay with it, then I guess you have an issue. And so to me, it's interesting. All of a sudden, this epiphany, like, what do you mean it has consequences?
Wake up.
What world do you live in that there is life without consequences? And it's just, I find it absolutely, absolutely astounding. Another email. Mac, I'm intrigued by your question relative to people insulating themselves from the media, which can bombard us 24/7. Does Woody insulate himself, like many people do these days, to see take on all comers relative to the media? How does he get his information? Does he find it negative and overwhelming like a lot of people do? So we've had an interesting conversation about just the amount of negative news that comes at you now 24/7, and much of it is click-driven, negative stories. For instance, Woody, did you know that there was another protest in Charlottesville over the weekend?
Yes, there was another
For 40 to 50 people.
Moonlight or midnight protest,
40 to 50 people for 10 minutes. Now,
I don't know how much of a... That's a drive-by protest.
That is nothing. That's not anything for a lot of different reasons. And do you find yourself, you're in the media business, do you filter what comes to you? Do you take on all comers? Your thoughts?
I think to a degree you have to do a little bit of both. First of all, I don't think you can insulate yourself effectively, short of, completely unplugging, going and essentially turning away from all current events, all news. You're gonna get I think you have a responsibility to stay informed on news and current events. That said, you have to be very careful about, as I said earlier, considering the source. So, you know, trying to maintain some kind of balance. And unfortunately, most television media does not support that. So, you know, pick your poison. You're going to get a slanted view, whether it be from you know, Fox News or from CNBC or MSNBC. You're going to get a slant. Maybe if you're pressed for time, the answer is watch a little bit of both.
Oh my God! I think CNN is so awful. I read a lot of news. I read the Post, I read the New York Times, and you know, and I'm like you. I'm conscious of the perspective of the proprietor.
Yeah.
But you know, good reporting is good reporting, and you know it when you read it. You know good straight news reporting when you read it. And so CNN, good God.
Yeah, you're making it. I think all television, whether it be cable or broadcast, all of the television news outlets are not worth the time, frankly. I think you're better served, as you said, reading your news and trying to read it in a balanced way. So, you know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, balance that with, I don't know, Washington Post, balance that with, Christian Science Monitor. I mean, there's some good sources out there, but you have to dedicate the time to read it. You need to read it critically, and if you can save the time to do that by not watching the pablum that's on the television, then I'd encourage people to do that.
All right. So when I put up the Credible News Network, CNN, right, and I have probably a dozen, maybe more as I grow it, but it's going to be a page like the Drudge Report, right? Credible News Network. It's going to be done by journalism students that are disabled veterans. And what we do is we vet stories. We look for credible reporters that report news from many of the places you just discussed, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Christian Science Monitor. And it doesn't matter where they write because they're all over the place. But there are reporters that are out there that do great reporting. And what we want to do is create a site that doesn't lean left or right, but is focused on the truth. And by reporters that have reputations and a proven track record of focusing on facts and delivering the truth. So would you come to our website and read the content?
Yeah, absolutely.
Think it's an idea that has merit?
I do. I honestly do. And if it's a you know, I would see that as another way that, not just as a career opportunity, but it's another way for some of our veterans to actually give back, number one, to help, other people get to the truth, but also as a service, a continued service.
All right.
That's got merit.
I like that. All right. So when I come to you for funding, don't pull the alligator arm stunt on me again.
the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Exactly. Another email. Mac, is the Gazette going to do anything relative to the leadership issues and the controversy relative to the United States Navy? Much discussed, Woody, hearings about it, within the last 10 days. The CNO on Capitol Hill in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee. Pretty interesting stuff, institutional stuff. And to be honest with you, I think we're foolish in the Marine Corps if we don't think that we suffer from some of the same things, because we've gone down similar paths in terms of budgets and manpower and trying to do more with less. Are you guys at any point going to treat that issue?
I would tell you, again, remember that the content of the Gazette comes from the Marine Corps, right. Meaning from Marines, Lance Corporal to Lieutenant General. Those are my authors. We don't contract out folks to write articles for us. So to date, I've not gotten anything on that subject, and I would say there's a very obvious answer to that. It's the Marine Corps Gazette by Marines, written by Marines for Marines, with the exceptions of our chaplains, our medical officers, and those folks. I don't have a lot of Navy officers or Navy personnel at all writing for the magazine. Certainly not writing on a surface warfare ships issue or leadership failures. That said, if I got something along those lines, particularly if it made that connection to potential mistakes, a bad path that the Marine Corps may have gone down in the past or may be continuing down, yeah, I'd publish something like that. But to date, just haven't had anybody writing on it.
Got it. All right, talk to us about offline content that we might be interested in. So just so everybody knows, if you receive the Gazette, there's a printed magazine, but there's also other what do they call that in a DVD? There's the editor's cut. Is that what they call it?
The web edition.
There's the editor's cut that has more in it. And so I'm curious, what's in the editor's cut this month that we ought to take a look at?
You've got a sizable web edition in October. Mostly the two main themes, both in the magazine, printed magazine, and the web edition, more content on logistics. I'll highlight a couple of them. Increasing sea basing by Marine Major Robert Barber and Army Major Christopher Wolf, writing about kind of a combined or joint service approach to sea basing. Good article there. Also, a bridge really from our September issue, which was intelligence focused, and the October logistics focus, article on physical network analysis by Major William Sumption. And that art and science of what you and I learned as a MACU and intelligence preparation on the battlefield, that physical network analysis is how the intelligence community support logisticians with analysis of their, as they develop distribution networks, how the terrain may limit or support that, given infrastructure in a remote location, undeveloped country may limit or support that. So good article there. Got an article by CW4 Robert Toole, In God We Trust, All Others Use Data, which is the MAGTAF planners.
Well said.
That's the MAGTAF planners' view of planning for deployments and how we actually have to have a data driven approach to planning for deployments. And then I've got a couple other articles online in our other focus area in October, which is irregular warfare. Really good one by Lieutenant Colonel Mike Riley, Ancient Wars of the 21st Century. So I'll call it kind of a historical focus on the irregular fights that we've been in for the last 17 years. Got a pick on then that one as well on the director's cut, as you call it.
There it is, the director's cut. I like that because really what it does is it makes you personally responsible for that content. So I really like that you're put in that position. But you're actually responsible for all of it. So I'm not sure that makes any difference. First of all, Woody, I appreciate your time today. I said I'd be punctual. I was late because I was bloviating about life. So with apologies. Thanks for doing this.
No worries. Glad to have the opportunity.
All right. One more thing. People that have those of you that have allowed your Gazette subscription to lapse, it is easier than ever to go ahead and to renew it. and Woody's going to tell you how to do it in a second. But I just want to tell you something. If you, I mean, when you see something like the Battle of Kantian in the PBS series, The Vietnam War, and your jaw hits the table about what those Marines did and this, the conditions they endured, you can go to the Gazette online archives and you can search Kantian, and you get the articles that those guys wrote when they came back. And it is awesome. It is absolutely awesome, talking about the tactical levels that they learned, lessons that they learned, the leadership lessons that they learned. If you're a reader, if you like history, most of us love the Marine Corps, and it is a great asset, not just for current stuff, but every time you see something, you can go back into the Gazette. I did it with Iwo Jima a few years ago, and it was article after article written in the first person, come on, are you kidding me?
In a lot of cases, those articles were written weeks or not months after the action. So very, very fresh in the author's mind.
Yeah, when the pronouns you're reading are I and we, it's a little bit different reading, okay? It's great. And so I'm telling you, so what do you tell everybody? I mean, it's pretty simple to renew a subscription or to create one. How do they do it?
Yeah, the easiest way, if you want to go online, www.mca-marines.org, and click on membership. You can also call our member services. They're at 1-866-622-1775, and they'll sign you up over the phone, take care of you using a credit card. And if you have a recent subscription, you will always get a warning order. You'll get a last issue magazine that'll come to you with notice on it that your subscription is running out. This is your last issue. Go ahead and mail this in, and you can renew it. And it's membership's $42 a year, and that gets you the full membership, digital access to both magazines and those archives, both for the Gazette and Leatherneck, and gives you the print magazine of your choice in the mail.
Well done. Well done. Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired. He is the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette. He is the publisher of Leatherneck Magazine. Woody, first of all, thanks for doing this. Always appreciate you coming on. Always appreciate your candor and what you're doing for the Marine Corps writ large. So have a great day. Thanks.
Same to you, Mac. Thanks much.
Out of here. That is Chris Woodbridge. He's he's one of the dudes who comes on and he's just a good guy, and as most Marines, in my experience, tend to be. Most Marines who have devoted a lot of their life to the Marine Corps, and a lot of Marines only devoted a little bit of their time to the Marine Corps, but Marine Corps is a different place. We have a different assimilation process, and the guys who and girls who make it through that tend to be pretty good people. Not all the time, but a lot of times. All right, we'll take a break. The Gunner is supposed to join us coming up yet next. I've yet to hear from him this morning, so we'll see. We'll see. There's I got an email. I don't know. You know, again, it's here's an email. It's an email, Mac. It's interesting listening to you wrestle with life. Many of us wrestle with the same issues. I find myself not only amused, because that's really the wrong word, but I find myself thinking about the things you discuss here on a daily basis, because I've had many of them rolling in around my head for a long time. I appreciate your willingness to share your confusion with the rest of us. We all suffer through it. And I too am dismayed at the direction of the country. It seems to me that we are more divided than ever by what I see on TV. But what I saw in Las Vegas, what I saw in Houston, what I saw in Florida, and every time we meet each other, I see the exact opposite. I don't get it. It seems like the most divided people appear on TV. The rest of us that live our lives as Americans certainly have opinions, but we spend most of the day helping each other, solving problems, and whatnot. I just saw a commercial on TV that showed sports fans wearing garb standing next to a vehicle that had broken down. And the question is, would fans from a different area stop and help them? And universally, they did. Just because you were on the other team didn't mean that people wouldn't help. That's America. That's America that I know. What I see on TV, I don't know that country, where what divides us is more important than what unites us. I don't know how to change it, though. I don't know how it gets better, which is what you seem to wrestle with on a pretty regular basis. Good luck. Appreciate you sharing with the group. Out. You're welcome. All right, we're going to take a break. Gunner set to join us, maybe or maybe not. The gadfly. Anyway, we'll check in with him. I've got a quiz for him, by the way. More of Armory Radio coming up next. My thanks to Chris Woodbridge from the Marine Corps Gazette for joining us. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.